Welcome to Living Above the Drama. I'm your host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio, and today my guest is Connor McCormick. Connor is a millennial generation writer, spiritual researcher, and ordained minister. His writings have been featured on the Harv Bishop blog, a leading forum for New Thought, New Age spirituality. And his writings are also highlighted in the essay collection New Thought Revolution, A Powerful Vision for the Future. Connor is a member of SOUL, which is Seekers of Universal Light, a spiritual outreach to facilitate individual and collective healing in body, mind, and soul. SOUL was founded by Joe Citrone, noted author and paranormal researcher. Connor is also co-host of SOUL's forthcoming web series, Accents of Emotion, which will explore a diverse array of topics ranging from addiction to the power of prayer. He lives in Rhode Island with his wife and infant son. You can find his writing on Medium.com, and in addition, he currently serves as the Program Services Director for the National Institute of Whole Health. Welcome, Connor. I'm delighted you've taken the time to join us this evening.
Thank you so much, Georgiana. It's a real pleasure and privilege to be here.
Oh, the pleasure is all ours. I mean, I don't get too many millennials on the show. Let me be honest with you right up front. You are obviously, a member of a very, I'd say a very unique generation in the sense that your age group has been kind of caught in the surreal change and overlap of generational, some people call it progress, some people call it decline, but there has definitely been a transitional time, during the period. You know, it started in mid to late 80s, and went on for 10, 15, 20 years after that. So, I know that the millennials have, they have kind of existed for the most part without much spiritual affiliation. And I think it's so important because you are a young person with a lot of conviction and a lot of passion about beliefs and values and spirituality. So I think it's wonderful that you're on the show. And who knows, maybe some of the millennials listening, they might take a second look at the idea that spiritual teachings or even religious teachings can really be an invitation to how we might discern how we'd like to live our lives. So please jump in and start talking about you and how you evolved and became interested in the subject of spirituality and became a minister.
Oh, certainly. And so I just want to say thanks again for having me on. I've been a longtime listener, and so it's great to be a first-time participant, and I'm excited to see where the conversation goes. But
absolutely, yeah.
Little bit about me and my spiritual path. From a very young age, just from my own earliest recollections and from what family members have told me, I've been a very introspective and thoughtful young man. I remember as a young child, about 2 or 3 years old, I was like all children, I was very rich in imagination, and I recall experiencing presences and having a foot in two worlds almost. You know how they say children are very intuitive and they are able to kind of see behind the veil. And I've seen that a little bit in my own research with the paranormal and other spiritual aspects, but I was just very in tune with that side of life. And that continued when I started going to church. My family, both my parents were raised Catholic and they were very involved in their church. And my siblings and I would go to Mass every Sunday. And just the experience of going into this, it's like crossing a threshold going into a church or to a cathedral. It's almost like going into the womb of Mother Church, to use the symbology. And you're just reminded on all sides with the icons and the stained glass and the rituals, which I think are meant to elevate you to a different plane of awareness and consciousness of higher realities. And that was something that really stuck with me from a young age, hearing the music, remembering the ambiance, the atmosphere, that's something that really stuck with me. But I think, as is the case with a lot of children, as I got older and I kind of got more into the creedal and the dogmatic aspects of it, and I started understanding what kind of the bedrock was of Catholic belief and the doctrine of original sin and Jesus' vicarious atonement on the cross and his death for all of us as being born to sin and a very kind of judgmental and punitive God, that original wonder kind of started to dissipate as I got further into the religious teachings of the church. And I went through my teenage years and, me being a good teenager involved in sports and school, and my mind drifted away from religion, spirituality for a while. But I had a health crisis my first year of college, which necessitated me coming back home. I was going to school in upstate New York, but that crisis really made me pause and think. And, for better or for worse, I kind of fell back into that old Catholic idea of, this happened because God is punishing me for something I did wrong and I need to reevaluate my life. And that got me started on adult catechism classes because my parents have been very hands-off about it. When we were teenagers, they said, if you want to do it, that's great. If not, that's okay. But I decided to avail myself of that. I dived deep into Catholic teaching even more. I went through all the catechism courses and I was eventually confirmed and I became very active in the church. But, and of course, in the course of our personal evolution, I kind of got this, the further I got, I kind of realized, those old questions started to come up for me again about certain aspects of the dogma and the rituals, and one thing led to another. And I eventually left Catholicism. I dabbled in kind of more evangelical Protestantism, very heavy on a literal reading of the Bible and the Bible being God's supreme word and everything. And I dabbled in those circles for a while. And unfortunately, it was also coincided with very, very bad time in my life. I was a very angry young man. I had a lot of unresolved emotional, psychological issues. And unfortunately, I dabbled in conspiracy theories. I got into Alex Jones, InfoWars, and that whole crowd, and it was not a good time for me personally, and my fundamental religious beliefs only kind of fed that, and I was in a very, very bad spiral. But as with all things, I feel like the universe always throws you a life preserver, when you need it most, and that came for me in the form of a self-help book that was on my mom's shelf for years. I hadn't even noticed before, called The Power of Your Subconscious Mind by Dr. Joseph Murphy. It's a very old classic book in self-help and new thought, mind metaphysics. And first time I read it, I was hooked. And as I'll describe further, that kind of set me on my journey into more alternative modes of spirituality and new thought and new age and along that kind of line.
Right. So what was it about this new approach, this new thought philosophy? Was it the tone? Was it the acceptance of the participant as opposed to the judgment against the participant? If you were to identify, because I think there are many, many people in your generation, Connor, who can really relate to what you're saying. I think this kind of Old Testament God of, fire and brimstone, didn't play well with your generation, to say the least. So what do you think it is about New Thought that is so appealing and that really embraces the individual as a discernible, a person who can discern for themselves rather than being dictated to the how-to movement of spirituality?
Right. And just a little background for those who may not be familiar with New Thought. Obviously, we all know about the power of positive thinking and The Secret and kind of just how this idea that, maintaining positive thoughts, having a positive mindset leads to good things. That's become very much a kind of a trope in our culture. And in some cases, for cynics, it's become a bit of a punching bag. But, New Thought has its roots in actually 19th century transcendentalism, as popularized by Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, and other thinkers, and also borrowed heavily from Mary Baker Eddy's Christian Science movement, and it has a lot of diverse influences and strains, some Eastern spirituality and philosophy, but the main crux is, like I alluded to, that, you know, our thoughts, our attitudes, our emotions, our beliefs are causative factors for the things that happen in our lives. You know, we're not just kind of at the mercy of a universal dice toss or an arbitrary, you know, Old Testament God, like you said. You know, we're not sinners in the hands of an angry God who can choose to harm us anytime he wants, you know, to use the old evangelical term. But basically, the thing that appealed to me about it is that it really puts you in a frame of mind that you're the captain of your soul and you're the master of your fate. You know, you're not subject to these random arbitrary influences. You're not Job from the Old Testament looking at the sky saying, why is this happening to me? You know, I'm a just person. I'm a good person. Why are these things happening to me? So the thing that really appealed to me was that sense of self-agency and self-efficacy that, yes, through your positive thought, through your self-disciplined emotions, and through really working on renewing your mind and getting in touch with a higher intelligence, new thought, a term new thought likes to use a lot and it's prevalent in much of the literature, is, you know, we're outlets for infinite intelligence or the mind of God. You know, the human mind can serve as a point of concentration, focus for the mind of God. And we can accomplish great things through attuning ourselves to this higher intelligence. So it was a very, very welcome breath of fresh air after being reared in very, very strict and very stern thou shall not type of theology and philosophy. So that's what really, really got me going on the path.
So it was very inviting, and it was very kind of, you know, unconditional acceptance oriented, saying, you know, you are you. And one of the things that's so interesting to me is that what you're describing, and we talked a lot about this in the pre-interview, you're kind of describing free will, the whole free will concept. And yet if you look at traditional religion, the free will concept is in there. And yet, you know, many people may find this concept of new thought somewhat foreign. And yet it really is an extension of our free will potential, isn't it? I mean, what do you think of that?
Oh, absolutely. And to build off your point, and I think, we did talk about in the pre-interview about how I think if you strip away what we've come in the Western mind, especially to view as a anthropomorphic God, you know, the classic image of the old beard man in the sky who's kind of keeping a running tally of all the good things and bad things we're doing, and he's going to decide, you know, whether we are rewarded or we're punished. I found that to be, and many of my peers and many of people in my age group who I've spoken to who have fallen away from religion entirely have said, living in a modern world, I can't, you know, it's kind of very restricting to bind yourself to that. But the great thing about New Thought is, like I alluded to earlier, about how it's a very syncretic blend of, you know, major world religion and philosophy. The thing that appeals to me about it is that it doesn't mitigate the fact that there are consequences for our actions. I want to make that clear, because some critiques of positive thinking I've read tend to say, oh, well, you know, it's a feel-good philosophy. It doesn't say anything about ethics or, you know, consequences or anything like that. But that's the farthest thing from the truth. It's about viewing it in a more mature lens. You know, the thing that I like about New Thought iterations is that it takes the Eastern page out of, you know, in Hinduism, Buddhism, and other Eastern thought, you know, the idea of karma, you know, a natural cause and effect. You know, it's part of an inbuilt framework of natural laws in the universe. Ralph Waldo Emerson called the law of compensation. Basically, what you put out, you get back. You know, if you put good out, you get good back. And if you put bad out, you get bad back. So I think that's a very mature and nuanced way of explaining, you know, kind of the law of cause and effect versus, oh, well, you know, God's up there in the sky and he's watching you. It's almost like Santa Claus. You better be good for goodness sake. You're going to get the coal in your stocking, you know?
Well, I got to tell you, this conversation is just really, really going off for me in many different directions. I'm thinking of so many things. I'm thinking of the law of thermodynamics, the third law of thermodynamics. See, all of the different components of science, the different components of physics, and how it appears. You know, we talk about karma, we talk about, you know, what you do comes back to you, and, you know, the way you treat other people is the way you get treated. If we look, as a matter of fact, here in Boston, we have the Museum of Science, and there's this incredible display of a pendulum that swings back and forth, and the variation of the swing of the pendulum is dictated by the force that goes out to the force that returns. And in many areas of physics and science, we see that force and energy is really kind of reciprocal to itself. And the whole idea of thoughts and feelings and behavior and intention and action is really all about energy, isn't it? Isn't it about the energy that we put towards another person or put towards a project or how we behave? So I guess for me, what's happening in my brain as I'm going, you know, so much of this is interconnected to each other. You know, it's right. Like, I know we all have a tendency to break it down. You know, Christians say, oh, well, Christians, you know, if you don't believe in Christ, you're not saved. And, you know, other religions say, well, if you don't, you know, follow this or do that, then, you know, your soul is doomed. It's very interesting to me that the modern, you know, contemporary generations, including the ones after you, you guys are really, you're kind of taking a step back and you're saying, whoa, okay, let's look at the, contradictions. Let's look at, you know, how we're not integrating things. So do you think for millennials, I think you guys are all pretty darn smart, and certainly well educated. Do you think that there's an intellectual component that deals with integration and understanding? How much of that is, you know, part of the new thought?
Right. That's a great question. And I would like to say that we did have predecessors, you know, I those are very kind words about my generation, but, you know, the counterculture, you know, of the 60s and 70s kind of laid the groundwork for that. You know, they introduced, you know, widespread understanding of Eastern thought, particularly Buddhism, you know, kind of laid the groundwork for alternative mind-body medicine. So, you know, we're kind of just standing on the shoulders of giants, to use Isaac Newton's term. But I think from my perspective, you're right. I think it really is about being able to take a step back and connect the dots and make a complete whole out of very seemingly discordant and, you know, antagonistic parts, like you were referring to. This seeming divide between science and religion, you know, in our culture, oh, they can't be compatible. You know, one is all about finding the truth through, you know, logic, reason, observation, experiment. The other is about dogma and just believing what you're told. But I think if you really step outside the bounds of kind of that divisive dynamic, they're both, science and religion are complementary in trying to get to the root of the same thing. You know.
Yeah, but what's also very interesting, now, you know, I may get a lot of blowback on this one, but biology and science and religion, no one can prove either one of them. I mean, people think that science is like absolute proven fact. Science is theory, and religion is theory, because, like, let's just say, I mean, I'm a Christian, and that's been the story of my life. And to me, and I've studied so much, and you know, the Shroud of Turin and the life of Jesus and so many things. And I used to teach, you know, CCD, and I was a lay master teacher in Judeo-Christian philosophy. And the thing is that no one can prove anything. It's just really fascinating, you know. We can't prove science. Much of science is theory, and much of religion is belief. And so we've got these two kind of nebulous things that we're asked to commit absolutely to. Hard to believe, we have actually gone through the first section of the interview. It's so fascinating. Wow. I could listen to you. I know we've just blown by. When we come back, Connor, let's talk. There's so much to talk about. Let's talk about Norman Vincent Peale. Let's talk about, you know, the whole idea of the foundations of belief, the foundations of behavior, which is kind of what, you know, religion does. And I know you have a great definition for religion. So when we come back from break, let's jump on those things. There's really a lot to talk about with this subject, and it's absolutely wonderful. So don't go away, anybody. We will be right back with Connor McCormick.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donatio, relationship communication expert and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donatio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donatio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way. What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And today we're talking to Connor McCormick, who is a millennial generation writer, spiritual researcher, and ordained minister. We have been talking about the role, really, and the changing role of religion in people's lives today. I think we're all aware in the last 35 years, things have changed tremendously. And my own personal pet peeve is, I think that people and of any faith, of any religion, have stopped, by and large, praying. And I think that a lot of the stuff that we see today is the absence of prayer and gratitude. And we can talk about that a little bit later. But so things have changed dramatically. And what we do know is that religion gives us, faith gives us foundations for beliefs and behaviors. So we want to talk about that. But what do you think of Dr. Norman Vincent Peale, who really, I think, wasn't he the one of the mainstream New Thought people who, you know, really brought things into the fold, so to speak?
Right. And I'm glad you brought up Dr. Peale, because I am a very big fan of his work. Of course, I've read The Power of Positive Thinking. It's pretty much a landmark in modern self-help, self-development. But the interesting thing about Dr. Peale is, and we were talking a little bit about this on the in the pre-interview, that I think he did a very smart thing, because he was a mainline Christian minister. He was a Protestant minister. And I think he had dabbled and read widely in New Thought literature. But he knew that in order to kind of put these principles over to a mainstream Christian audience in America, he had to find some correlations and correspondences in the gospel and in the teachings of Jesus to say, you know, the Bible encourages this philosophy of positive thinking and, you know, creative visualization and faith to achieve your goals in life. The thing I love about Dr. Peale is that, you know, and he got a lot of flack for this from mainline Christians, that he focused too much on material achievement. You know, a lot of what he talked about is, you know, helping people find better jobs, making more money, having more fulfilling personal lives. And that's anathema, and still is, to a lot of, you know, preachers and ministers, to say, no, the focus should be on, you know, the rewards in the next world. And, you know, we can't get involved in this worldly accumulation of money and all this stuff. But that's what I loved about Dr. Peale. That's what I love about all the New Thought writers. They had a vision. They had a lived experience of this power of positive thinking and visualizing and affirming. And they had tested it in the laboratories of their own lives and their own experiences. And they had a message to share. And to go back to your earlier point about the overlap between science and religion. And that's one of the things I love the most about New Thought, is that it's never take my word for it. It's put this to the test in your own life. If thoughts are causative, put it to the test and see if it works. And if it works, then you have a workable model of faith and a workable model to navigate this world.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I kind of want to debunk a little stuff while we're talking about this, because I think you know from the pre-interview, health and behavior is an area that I've been very, very involved in for a long time. And what we do know, there are so many studies that talk about intentionality, that talk about our beliefs, our thoughts. And the big thing is, thoughts are things, okay? That thoughts mm-hmm. have energy to them and intention to them. And I think today, especially at places like Harvard and Beth Israel and many different research hospitals and universities around the country, they're doing tremendous studies on, you know, how our thoughts affect our health, how our thoughts affect our lives, and how we think about ourselves and how we think about the world around us. So I think that now, in today's world, I think that that's much more of an embraced philosophy. What is your experience of that?
Oh, absolutely. And even in my experience of working with NIWH and being involved in the program, I think that medicine is finally, slowly but surely, I think they might be kicking and screaming a little bit about it, but I think medicine is starting to realize, hey, there is something to this idea that our habitual thought patterns, our emotions, our attitudes and perceptions play a role in physical health. That's not to say that, you know, it's the end all be all. Obviously, we're multifaceted beings, you know, like the program says, there are five aspects of health. But I think medicine is finally starting to concede the point that, hey, you know, maybe this isn't quite woo-woo, and it's not kind of snake oil. And funny you mentioned Harvard. I believe it was Dr. Ted Kapchuk, who I believe you worked with him on a pilot program at one point, correct?
Yes, we did. That was over at Beth Israel, actually. That was really fascinating. I mean, that was going back well into the 90s. And right now at Harvard, they have these studies going on, fascinating studies about thought, intention, direction. I think it's a young science, but I think it's a very popular science.
Oh, definitely. And the thing that struck me, to go back to Dr. Kapchuk, is, like you allude to, they're doing a whole slew of studies at Harvard and all the major Boston hospitals. And one that he did that I read that was really fascinating was he did an honest placebo study wherein they actually were honest and upfront with the participants in the study that what we're giving you is a placebo. And there were pretty impressive rates of healing for I forget what the respective condition was. But the participants who received the honest placebo saw pretty significant rates of healing even after being told there was a placebo. Mm-hmm. So that's the amazing thing.
Right. Well, just think about it. Placebo. Just think about that. I mean, if I've been involved in a lot of research in my career. And when you look at the outcomes, placebo versus, the trial material, it's incredible how close the placebo outcomes mirror actually the experimental drug. And I think this is part of proving that what we think and believe. See, I'll share with you, Connor, the book that we wrote called Changing Behavior is really based on understanding that our beliefs and our values and our worldview as human beings is really what drives our behavior and our living choices. So we know very well that what we believe is really how we see the world and what we think is potential in the world. And there's a wonderful, wonderful doctor who was doing research. Her name went right out of my head, of course. she was doing research on brain chemistry and on the proteins that are produced during thought. You probably know who I'm talking about.
Dr. Candace Pert.
Yes, thank you so much. Candace Pert, brilliant woman who actually evidenced and showed, along with some other people like Steven Pinker and Martin Selman and some of these other people, that actually showed that thought produces proteins which communicate with cell membranes, which result in not only behavior, but results in physiological expression. So what does it all mean? If I believe something, whether it's religious or whether it's not religious, there's going to be a kind of action and reaction that takes place in the body and that takes place in my life. And this is why, in many ways, people are very comfortable in a dogma or in a religion, because we can watch other people think and feel and believe and manifest certain outcomes. So, I think the whole thing, and we talked about this at the interview, religion is really kind of about learning how to live. Now, you gave a definition that was terrific. What was that definition you gave about a religion? It meant to fold back on or to return back to?
Right. I know there's some debate about the exact etymology of the word religion, but some scholars believe it's it can be traced to a Latin word meaning to tie back to. And that to me is profound. That's resonated with me, because what are we all looking for but to tie back in some way to a higher order of understanding or a higher order of knowledge? Even people who profess to be agnostics or atheists, what are we all looking for? We want some form of clarity and some framework to navigate the world. And I think the idea of tying back to, and I used the term earlier, and a new thought, the term they use a lot is higher mind or infinite intelligence. But whatever term you affix to that order of being, so to speak.
Right.
You know, I think, right.
Yeah. It's just amazing to me that I don't think people are so terribly different from one another. And when you look at these Time magazine and Life magazine, and you look at that 90% or more of Americans believe in God, I mean, that's kind of staggering, you know? That's a huge amount of people who believe in God. They believe in it in very different species, very different ways. But when we can see, like you say, we're all desiring a foundation, something that makes sense, something that resonates with, yes, this is how I can and should and might and will live my life for the best outcome. Because it's all about the best outcome. It's all about survival. It's all about having successful living. And so in that regard, isn't it funny, like with politics, we get hung up in the details when we can't take that long view that we're really all on the same page?
Oh, absolutely. And it's unfortunate that we're seeing it play out the way it is, that, as you said, on the political stage. You know, and we were talking about earlier about just imagine how different things would be if even just a small portion of the population kind of had this epiphany that, oh, you know, we're all kind of in this thing called life together. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, if we have different tastes and different modes of expression and interests. But, you know, when it comes to the real major things, why not try to link back to that understanding of, you know, we're all together in this thing called life. You know, we all emerge from the same source. So we're all going to go to the same place in the end. You know, well, it would be fascinating to see that.
Yeah, well, we all know you know, what gets mucked up in all of that is the ego. And the ego is a wonderful thing. It stops us from walking in front of a bus. And it really does help us to have, to a certain extent, some self-regard and self-respect. However, and we were talking about the, you know, the whole situation of what's going on with the pandemic right now. And so many people, I don't know anybody who hasn't said, well, this is really like a correction. This is really, you know, the divine has said, you people have made a mess of things. Let's, you know, and this happens periodically. You can go into Google and see a long list of all the pandemics that have taken place over the millennials, and it's millenniums, and it's incredible that so many of these pandemics have wiped out huge amounts of people and have kind of set society right for a while. And so when we look at our society, it's competitive, it's cutthroat, it's hostile, it's greedy, it's money-grabbing. I mean, what do we see every night in the news? So it seems that many of us believe that this is some kind of a divine or spiritual correction of sorts, tragic as it is to lose lives in it. But in a sense, and I'd love to hear you talk about this, because so many of the young people I talk to now say, you know what, I'm so glad to be out of the rat race. I don't have to be running around. I don't have to do this and do that and do this to prove that I'm worthy. And I don't have to get, you know, the best car and, you know, get picked for the best job or the best, you know, role in the community theater. I mean, people, I think, feel so pressured and so put upon that they just don't stop moving. What do you think about that? I mean, you're a young guy, and I know you have a young wife too.
Right. That's, you raised a lot of great points there. I'll start by saying that, because like you, I've perused Google and the internet, and I've seen, you know, there are some schools of thought who say, you know, oh, this is, you know, some sort of a sign of an impending apocalypse or second coming of Christ, what have you. And, you know, I'm respectful of that point of view. I don't want to begrudge anyone the right to believe, but personally, I don't think it's going to unfold literally in that way. You know, I think if we step back and look at it as a metaphor, you know, and that's one of the things that appeals to me about New Thought, is that it takes a much more metaphorical perspective on scripture, particularly because, you know, I, despite my differences with mainstream Christianity, I still read the Bible regularly. I pray, you know, I hold Jesus in very high esteem as a exemplar and a model of divine living and living in divine harmony. So But I think, like you're alluding to, I think it's an opportunity for us to step back and really assess what's important, you know. And I found that to be the case in my relationship. Having my wife home, my wife is a teacher, having her home, you know, it's a little bit stressful. She has to do distance learning with the kids, but having her home has been wonderful. We've been both able to spend time with our son, who's going to be turning one at the end of May. And, you know, we just moved into a new house. And for me, it's just been a wonderful opportunity to look at kind of the divine ordering of everything, you know, because just when we closed in our house was when the worst of it hit and all the shutdown doors were put in place. So we got it right under the wire. And it's just such a wonderful opportunity for, and I think young people particularly, you know, we've kind of been almost from day one inoculated to be on the, you know, on the hamster wheel, as it were. So to have something like this is really a great way to pump the brakes and kind of reassess and say, oh, you know, maybe I have a chance now to explore that hobby I always wanted to engage in, or maybe I can take this time to go back to school or, you know, earn my degree online. So I think just it's a one, and that's not to downplay the suffering and the palpable, just horrible things that are happening to people. My heart goes out to the people that are suffering, and, you know, I've done what I can. I've donated to charities and done what I can to help relief efforts. But I think we need to keep in mind there is that silver lining. Otherwise, we'll just be drowned in that despair. Like you said, every night of the news, you know, the numbers coming in, things seem to be getting worse.
Well, again, we go back to physics. Mm. You know, we look at the intensity of suffering. And on the other side of that, there are two sides to everything. There's always two sides to everything. And it's heartbreaking. I mean, I've been in medicine for, you know, so many decades. And to see that kind of suffering and to lose colleagues and to lose children and to lose the elderly who can't even be held or touched or kissed or told that they're loved by their family. I mean, the tragedy of it, the metaphor of it, it's profound. I mean, I've watched the news and just cried watching these stories of people, and it's just a devastating and overwhelming thing. I was watching one story last night about a 100-year-old man who just passed away from coronavirus. His twin brother was born 100 years ago, and he died within 2 weeks from the Spanish flu. Now, I mean, what do you think the chances of that happening are? And when I read it, I said, and he always talked about his twin, who he never met. And I said, well, he's going to go back and meet his twin. You know, that's what I kept thinking. You know, they're going to be together. But the stories are gut-wrenching. And yet some of the outcomes, some of the growth and some of the change, the personal, spiritual evolution is really profound. We have to take another break, but after the break, I've got to get back to something you started talking about earlier. You were telling a story about how, in the pre-interview, you told me a story about how your family had a summer house, and you would go out there with your family, and you had this real sense that there were other beings.
Right. Yes.
And then years and years later, the house was, it was eventually sold, but before that, there were people who were coming there to photograph the orbs of the different entities and energies that were going on. And now you're in that field. Now you're working with that. So when we come back from break, please tell us about the paranormal work you're doing now with Mr. Citrone, I believe. And share that with us, because we're all fascinated by that subject. So listeners, don't go anywhere. We're going to be back again with Connor McCormick.
Are you tired of not feeling heard and not feeling valued? Are you longing to receive the love and respect you want? There is a solution right now. Transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills. Dr. Georgiana Donadio, relationship communication expert, and number one national best-selling, award-winning author of Changing Behavior, explores the unconscious patterns contributing to stress, lack of fulfillment, and our relationship interactions. By learning and applying the simple principles of behavioral engagement, which has been clinically tested in leading hospitals, to develop mindful pure presence, you can experience the happiness and fulfillment you deserve in your relationships. Begin changing your behavior today with Living Above the Drama radio show host, Dr. Georgiana Donatio. Call 888-354-4325. 888-354-HEAL. Call now.
Become credentialed for the emerging medical health and wellness field. Work within healthcare environments or start your own private practice and bill for your services with your own NPI number. Train for this exciting specialty in patient-focused health and wellness education with the National Institute of Whole Health, NIWH, the only nationally accredited training program for patient health education and advocacy. Open to credentialed health and education professionals, our training qualifies for health educator liability insurance, a national provider identification number, and our expert-prepared billing and coding manual.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health, visit www.niwh.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL, 888-354-4325.
If someone said you could transform your life and enhance your relationships by using a few simple communication techniques that can be applied in almost any setting, would you want to learn these skills? If the answer is yes, you've picked up the right book. This easy-to-read guide is loaded with simple skills that have been scientifically shown to have a huge impact on our relationships. By using the steps in this book, you will be able to enhance not only your life, but the lives of everyone around you. If you have the intention to practice and apply these skills, it will become a natural part of who you are. A true must-read for anyone who wants to transform their professional and personal lives. Changing Behavior. Immediately transform your relationships with easy-to-learn, proven communication skills by Georgiana Donatio.
You can purchase Changing Behavior by Dr. Georgiana Donatio by visiting Amazon.com, where it is available in both Kindle ebook and paperback.
Dr. Gass is on the advisory board of HealthCorp, a new program which was begun by Dr. Mehmet Oz.
65% are overweight and 35% are obese, and the sharpest rise in this country is between the age group of 4 to 8 years old.
Throughout his career, he has been inspired by patients who have experienced dramatic recoveries through lifestyle changes.
The National Institute of Whole Health is a perfect example of how people will learn to really take control of their lives in a healthy way.
What they've done is they've collected basically the who's who of integrative health, and they've brought them together to give a series of lectures where they can then communicate with health professionals to basically deliver the message that we have to look at medicine from a different perspective.
For more information about the National Institute of Whole Health and their accredited professional continuing educational programs, go to www.wholepersonhealthcare.org or call 1-888-354-HEAL.
And today we are talking to a young millennial generation writer, spiritual researcher, and ordained minister. Connor has also been doing research, paranormal research, and he has some stories to share with us. Prior to the break, I was asking him, during the pre-interview, we had talked about his what got him into the field that he's into, and he was talking about as a young boy, he was visiting in his family's summer house, I believe, somewhere in the Berkshires, and you had some kind of paranormal experiences. And then many, many years later, when the house, you know, after you were all grown up and everything, the house turned into like an orb fest, right?
Right.
Yeah, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it was actually a bit of a eerie foreshadowing of sorts for my future line of work, but I'll get to that in a bit. But yeah, like I was talking about earlier, as a young boy, I always kind of had my finger on that pulse of, you know, things behind the veil. You know, I was always very in tune with that, and I was very sensitive to impressions. And but like you were saying, you know, my family had a summer house out in Middlefield, Massachusetts, right on the edge of the Berkshires, right across from the New York border. And it's a fantastic landscape out there in Western Mass, you know, very, very rural, very primal, you know, very kind of primeval forest. And it's very palpable, raw energy. You're out there in nature, you know, very, very small rural mountain communities. And when I was, I think it was maybe about 6 or 7 years old, I remember very distinctly, we had gone out to, you know, just on a vacation, and my brother and I were asleep on, I think we were on a fold out, we were on air mattress or something. And it was very early in the morning, and there was kind of this, this expansive lawn out in front of the house. It was an old kind of turn of the century, old country estate. And I woke up, and it was in that very delicate time of morning, like, you know, like 3 or 4 o'clock, where some researchers in the paranormal say that the veil is thinnest between our dimension and other dimensions. But I recall just being drawn over to the door that led out to that area. And, you know, unbeknownst to me, and, you know, it absolutely stunned my young mind, I saw this very spectral figure standing there in the field. It, you know, obviously you want to say, oh, what's this person doing out there? But there was, you know, this tall, dark, spectral figure, and it had bright red shining eyes, like something you'd see in a horror movie. And it just locked its gaze onto me, and I was petrified. And I don't know how long I was there for, but eventually I managed to break its gaze and run back to bed and throw my head into the pillow. But I was hesitant to tell anyone about it, but, you know, it's something that really, really marked me.
Wow, that must have been, did you tell your sibling about it? Was that something you shared?
I did, yes. I shared that with my older brother, and, you know, he was kind of, you know, being an older brother, that's just my kid brother doing something weird, you know, so didn't get any sympathy there. But
what was interesting is I was probing you about this during the pre-interview,
right.
And I asked you, well, was there anything, you know, anything that would make sense to that? Was there, you know, anything around the neighborhood? And you told me that right across the street from the house was a cemetery.
Correct. That's true. Very old cemetery.
Right. So, I mean, what do you think now that you're into the paranormal research? Do you think there might have been a correlation between what you saw and, you know, an entity from the cemetery, as it were?
Right. That's a million-dollar question, right? And the thing about paranormal research is, I know it's very kind of glossed up and made to be very sexy on the TV shows, and, you know, it's kind of every little thing is made to be, oh, there has to be a paranormal explanation. And I found in my own experience that, you know, for every bona fide moment you have like that, you know, there's about 10 others where, oh, it's just is that an orb? No, it's a bug on the lens, you know, something like that. But in this case, you know, as I got older, I tried to write it off and rationalize. I said, oh, maybe, you know, maybe it was just kind of some suggestion planted in my subconscious mind about something I heard in church about devils or ghosts or something like that. But as I've delved deeper into this field, you know, from what I've seen with accumulating my own evidence and working with Joe, as I'll talk about in a bit, but I am convinced that there are portals and that there are access points between our dimension of space and other dimensions. I think we are, you know, science is postulating, I think there are about 11 possible dimensions and maybe even many more than that. But I think, you know, like cemeteries, you know, places like they talk about Gettysburg, where great, you know, where great bloodshed and there was great emotional turmoil and great traumatic events happened. I think these serve as kind of entry points, or they're impressed with psychic energy that allow these entities to come through and appear to sensitive people.
Right, and I want to tie this back up to the beginning of our conversation, because there really is a connection between everything we've talked about. Mm-hmm. And whether we're talking about looking at positive psychology, whether we're looking at Norman Vincent Peale, where we're talking about, and her name went right out of my head again.
Candace
Pert. What we're talking about is energy. We're talking
right.
about thought. We're talking about feeling, intention. We're talking about the human component of life. What's the difference between a dead body and a living body? Is energy, movement, because if you, you know, when we die, there's no more energy, there's no more vibration. And it's, of course, there's so much literature about the energy leaving the body when people, you know, are hovering over themselves as they're trying to being, you know, resuscitated. So what we're really talking about here, whether we're talking about all the stories from Gettysburg, and there are so many books written about it, or whether we're talking about what happened to you at your summer home, or whether we're talking about, I know you're involved with a gentleman who is very much, he's very well known in the field, and
right.
you're doing research with him, you know, kind of ghost busting, ghost hunting. But it's all about the presence of energy, isn't it? Do you want to, and we're getting ready to, I can't believe that so much time, it's just gone, it's just flown by. So we've got another couple of minutes. Do you want to talk about the energy and what you and he are doing together, you know, to bring this more out, you know, to a popular, you know, kind of attention, because it's a fascinating, I don't know anybody who's not interested in the subject. Very few people are not interested in the subject.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Just do a brief little detour about how I got to know Joe. I had put out an ad on Craigslist. I was doing some freelance work. You know, I was looking to pick up a freelance editing or writing gig. And, you know, I put the intention out there that I wanted to work with someone. Yeah, talk about intention. I wanted to work with someone who was in line with my values, who would give me an interesting project and really kind of spur me to new heights professionally and personally. And lo and behold, 3 days later, I get the email from Joe, and he's saying, I'm working on this novel, and you sound like right up my alley. You know, well, let's meet up. And one thing led to another, and I helped him write the book, but it just really blossomed to a great friendship and just professional collaboration. You know, Joe is very much like myself. He's been a lifelong seeker, and, you know, he's kind of bounced around from, you know, he grew up Catholic. Then he went through, you know, he has a very interesting story, but, you know, he went to prison for a while, then he found that he got into charismatic ministry, and then he, you know, then he kind of went away from that and fell into paranormal research. But make a long story short, you know, the thing that's great about what we're doing is that it's not just about kind of chasing, you know, we're not just chasing evidence for the sake of getting on TV. You know, Joe's been on TV. He's been on the Travel Channel on several major programs. But, you know, ultimately it's about helping people, you know, because when these TV shows end and the investigators get their evidence, you know, what happens to the poor people who are suffering from this phenomenon in their home? You know, so we talked about wanting Soul, you know, Seekers of Universal Light, our outreach to be geared towards providing people that solace, and not just about the paranormal, you know, those who are suffering through addiction, you know, those who are, you know, grieving the loss of a loved one, or, you know, who are battling an illness, or, you know, we want to help people in all facets of life. And like we were talking about, just bringing that positive energy and kind of diffusing it into all areas, not just focusing on, oh, you know, we got some, you know, good orb footage and we're going to put that on TV, you know?
Well, we have to say goodbye, sadly, but I want to kind of conclude our discussion with something that I've been very aware of. As I said, you know, I've been involved with spiritual ministry myself, and there are three important questions we all ask ourselves. Why am I here? What's the meaning of life? And where do I go when I die? And I think no matter what approach we're taking, even if we're doing paranormal research, or if we're, you know, if we're a monk somewhere, or if we're, you know, an atheist living in the fields and loving birds and bees, we're all trying to answer the burning question, like, why am I here? What's the meaning of life? And what happens when I die? Because all of those beliefs and values and worldview, it informs our behavior, and it informs the way that we interrelate and connect with other people. Connor, I cannot thank you enough. This has been, I could just keep talking to you. This has been really fascinating. And I thank you so much for taking the time, and wonderful good luck with all of the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Georgiana. I could have gone on for hours, but it was great to sit and talk with you and to share and to have a dialogue, and very excited about the opportunities that we'll have with Soul to reach a lot of people.
Wonderful. Listeners, don't forget to join us again next week for another educational, inspiring, and uplifting interview here on Living Above the Drama.